ascoltando i podcast di Radio Bue, la web radio degli studenti dell'Università di Padova, www.radiobue.it.
Hello there, and welcome to Short Science, your 80s-themed portal for all the very best science in brief. I'm Elizabeth Hawke.
And I'm Emma Berger. Coming up on today's show, the latest science and health stories in news in brief. I'll be looking at the concept of flow in capsule science, and in a cheerful capsule medicine, Elizabeth will be looking at the different ways our hearts can kill us.
That's right. Now, we've also got our guest capsule this week to be filled by Dr. Paul Evans, senior lecturer in the British Heart Foundation Cardiovascular Unit here at Imperial College.
All that will be coming up on today's show, along with our brand new quiz and some more science trivia for you to fathom out at home.
This is Short Science.
Heart disease always seems to be in the news, with some study or other commanding us to eat more of this or drink less of that.
That's right. And so we're going to be taking a look at a couple of these studies later on. But in the meantime, we're going to be considering the science of flow, because that's really what cardiovascular disease is all about, the flow of blood around the body, and hence the delivery of precious oxygen.
Now, frequent listeners will know all about our fantastic website. The address is www.shortscience.co.uk. If you've never checked it out, it is worth a look, if only for the fabulous 80s stylings.
But there is also quite a lot of useful information to be found there. Now, you can find out what's coming up on the show, listen again to a show you might have missed or really liked, and you can subscribe to the podcast or listen online via our handy podcast page.
Plus, you can send in your profile for everyone to take a look at, and even have your very own capsule science to tell people about your science.
Now, we're very interested in what you think about science. In fact, we're interested to hear from you at all. So send us an email to studio@shortscience.co.uk. You get a mention on the show, or if there's a question we can answer for you, let us know and we'll try our best. Now, you can also request capsule science or medicine topics or volunteer to be a guest on the show. And speaking of mentions, we had a lovely message from our very own Georgie Gould last week congratulating us on our efforts to defeat the weather and keep the show on air despite nature's best attempts to thwart us.
That was nice. So before we get going with the show, it's time to flag up a science event for this week.
That's right. So this week it's the Identity Project at the Wellcome Collection. Now, this is actually a 9-month ongoing series of events, but at the moment there is the 8 Rooms 9 Lives exhibition.
Sounds intriguing. So what's that?
Well, it covers everything from DNA fingerprinting as invented by Alec Jeffries to the diaries of Samuel Pepys and self-portraits from Claude Cahun, a Holocaust survivor. Now, the event is free and the galleries are open Tuesday to Sunday in Euston Road.
And more details on that will be available on our website events page at www.shortscience.co.uk/science-events, all one word. And this exhibition runs until April, so you've plenty of time to fit in a quick visit.
Now it's time for this week's science news in brief.
Alligators and birds have similar breathing mechanisms.
Nanotechnology to heal blood vessels from the inside out.
Newton really did have an apple experience.
And weaker wine may combat cancer risk.
My first snippet of news this week is that alligators and birds, two animals that initially seem totally different, have been found to have a similar breathing mechanism.
So is that different to the normal breathing mechanism found in mammals then?
Well, it is slightly different, yes, because the air is stored briefly in air sacs before going to the lungs, meaning air enters the lungs from the air sacs and exits via the windpipe, leading to a one-way airflow system. Scientists have previously only found this system in birds, leading them to believe that it was a system evolved for the high oxygen demands of flight.
And now they've found this very same system in alligators.
Well, it's not exactly the same, but an unusual airway next to the alligator's trachea seems to provide the function of the air sacs, allowing the same kind of one-way flow of air.
So what's the significance of this then?
Well, the theory is that the common ancestor of the alligator and birds, the archosaur, probably evolved this system in the early Triassic period, when atmospheric oxygen levels were extremely low, so then it could be more active, and it has been passed down to both modern alligators and modern birds.
Fascinating stuff. Now, the first health story today is the news that scientists at MIT have developed a molecule which can find, latch onto, and then treat damaged cells inside blood vessels.
Is this for heart disease?
Yeah, I mean, atherosclerosis is a condition where the walls of arteries become hardened, and when this happens, there's an increased risk of blockages developing, which can then lead to heart attacks and strokes. Now, this molecule, called a non-burr, can detect these abnormal cells within the hardening and release drugs right on the cell's doorstep.
So how do those non-burrs find the damaged cells?
Well, they're coated in a protein that can only stick to a component of the blood vessel called the basement membrane, and this membrane is only exposed when there is cellular damage. But I have to add that this hasn't been trialled in humans, it's just an interesting proof of principle.
Wow, that's great. So my next tidbit of science-related news is that documents have surfaced from the archives of the Royal Society telling the story of Newton and his apple, which inspired him to come up with his theory of gravity.
So did the apple really thwack Mr. Newton on the head or not?
Well, according to this account written by William Stukeley and published in 1752, Newton himself told him that while sitting under the apple trees thinking his thoughts, he simply started to wonder why it was that apples always fall straight to the ground. Unfortunately, for legend's sake, it seems that he escaped a bump on the head, but it was the apple that inspired him.
Well, that's unfortunate, but I reckon the story will live on, though.
I think you might be right, and for interest's sake, the Royal Society have got the manuscript on an interactive website for everyone to view online if any of our more sceptical short scientists wish to verify this tale.
Well, finally today, more conflicting evidence about wine and health. Now, you might remember not long ago when wine hit the headlines not for protecting our hearts, but for causing cancer. And the shocking statistic that men should only drink 2 glasses of wine and women 1 without risking bowel cancer. Well, now, a modification to this theory has emerged.
How so?
Well, researchers now think that it's the alcohol content that is directly responsible for the potential increased risk of bowel cancer.
So we should all be looking at for low alcohol wines then?
Well, scientists are saying that if we drink a glass of 10% red wine, as opposed to the normal 14% alcohol content of wine, our risk of developing cancer decreases by as much as 7%.
Wow, so is that an immediate effect or long term?
Well, that's the thing, really. There's a remarkable lack of specific information in this story. No one seems to know how many days worth of substituting 14% for 10% wine would be needed to affect this reduction. And no one knows if this reduction would then persist if you went back to the odd glass of 14% wine.
Well, that really does seem to just pour more confusion oil on those red wine fires.
Indeed. But any comments or questions about any of our news today, you know what to do. Send us an email to studio@shortscience.co.uk. Now it's time for Capsule Science. So this week, Emma is going to break down the concept of flow.
Well, yes indeed, Elizabeth. Flow is an important concept when looking at fluid dynamics, and that's how it ties into the rest of today's show, because when the flow of blood through blood vessels is compromised, that's when we get cardiovascular problems. Now, the general rules of flow and fluid dynamics are pretty much the same, whether you're talking about blood in blood vessels or water in rivers or in pipes. So I'm going to be using these examples to illustrate just how flow affects us.
So what is so special about flow then? Don't liquids just flow in a straight line downhill because of gravity, or maybe uphill if you push them really hard?
Well, if you have a straight channel with completely clear water, you probably would get flow like that, and that is known as laminar flow. However, if you think about most rivers, for instance, you can often see the water swirling about and you can get underlying currents, and that is because of turbulence.
So in rivers, flow is turbulent because it's not a perfect model of a channel.
Well, rivers do tend to meander, giving us bends where flow is affected, and they also carry all kinds of stuff in them, whether it's dissolved into the water itself or simply carried along by the current, such as bits of stone, silt, twigs, and other debris. In addition, at the edges of the river, the water encounters the riverbanks. So with any fluid in a container, friction is increased when it meets the edges of a solid container. But riverbanks are by no means smooth, increasing the friction even more that the water encounters at the riverbank.
So that in turn makes the water even more turbulent then?
Yes. Okay, so imagine 100 people running together at the same speed. So if you start with a clear way for all of them, they'll all stay running alongside one another pretty happily. Now, if you enclose them in a tunnel, put some poles up along the way, and get some of the runners to, say, carry a big stick, you'll find them all bumping into each other, swerving, and getting caught in a right old mess. Then you'll experience those runners getting pretty turbulent.
But that's rivers. But so what about, like, pipes, like blood vessels then? Do they have turbulence?
Yes, they do, although it may not be as obvious to see at first. Like rivers, both pipes and blood vessels have edges, obviously, at which the fluids experience friction. In addition, both will have stuff dissolved in the blood or water, which will act like those runners with big sticks getting in the other runner's way. One more thing is the bends. Now, let's go back to our runners in that tunnel. The runners on the outside of the bend can't go any further in a straight line when it bends round, so they start running towards the runners on the inside of the bend. This A creates even more chaos, i.e. more turbulence, and B, it slows down the runners on the inside if they're getting blocked by those outside runners turning.
So what happens when the runners on the inside get slowed down then?
Okay, so the inside runners are experiencing friction from the edge of the tunnel and blockage from the outside runners turning inwards. This means that at the bends, they're much slower than normal. So if we think about this in the context of a river, if there are twigs caught up by the current and carried along with it, then when the water slows down, this gives the twigs an opportunity to move out of the current and then get caught up in the riverbank. It also allows solids dissolved in the water to precipitate out and get deposited on the riverbank. This is why rivers can move position over time or, say, develop little lakes. And that's because the fast flowing outside of the bend erodes away the riverbank, while the inside edge narrows due to the build-up of debris.
And presumably, if blood or water in pipes have solids dissolved in them, the same thing happens there then?
Yep, that is exactly what happens. The precipitation is, say, like our runners having those long sticks tied to them with Velcro. And only when they slow down do they have the time and opportunity to untie them and leave them behind, so deposit them. So that's the most relevant point when thinking about cardiovascular disease, because it's at the bends in blood vessels where blood flow is slowed that fatty deposits and all that other rubbish can precipitate out of the blood and build up on the vessel wall, leading to things such as atherosclerosis.
Well, that's some fascinating stuff, and it's really interesting to hear all the science behind it. So if you've any questions about anything that Emma has just been telling us, or if you'd like to suggest a capsule science topic for another week, then please get your laptop open, your typing fingers poised, and send an email to studio@shortscience.co.uk. Now, before we hear from this week's guest, we've got roving reporter Chrissy Douglas live in the studio.
Good morning, Chrissy.
Good morning.
Now, Chrissy, we were thinking about all these stories we constantly hear in the media about heart disease. It's all very confusing. So have any papers come out recently?
Well, I noticed actually on the Imperial College website a report that caught my eye. And as we've been highlighting this morning, heart disease is a massive problem worldwide. In fact, it's the leading cause of death in the world and accounts for almost 7 million deaths.
That's a lot of deaths.
But yeah, what actually I didn't realise is over half of these deaths are caused by rhythmic disturbances. And this new research from Imperial College sheds lights on how the body's heartbeat is controlled at a molecular level. Researchers have identified a gene that is linked to disturbances in heart rhythm. As I'm sure you know, the heartbeat is controlled by electrical signals produced by the sinus node. These signals then spread across the right atrium to the left atrium, causing them both to contract, pushing the blood into the ventricles. And the signal then passes through the atrioventricular node, where they too contract and eject their load. And this electrical signal is transmitted by specialised proteins in heart muscle called ion channels. And the study undertaken at Imperial, which was published the week before last in Nature Genetics, found a new ion channel in the heart called SCN10A, which directly influences heart rhythm disturbances and a person's risk of cardiac arrest due to atrial fibrillation. And the mutation identified in the SCN10A gene is common and at an individual level has a modest effect on a person's risk of having heart rhythm problems. I think further research is needed to determine what other mutations exist in this gene and whether these variants may have a stronger effect. So in fact, the authors conclude that whilst the gene variant itself may only have a small effect on a person's risk of having heart rhythm problems, the study does give important new insight into the mechanisms affecting heart rhythms. And the results may allow better prediction and diagnosis of serious heart rhythm disturbances and in the future develop improved treatments to prevent ventricular fibrillation.
So it's interesting. It's one of those things that sounds all very interesting, but on an individual level probably isn't going to impact us that much. Now, there's quite a lot of stories in the media and in the press that are aimed to grab our attention and make us worry on a sort of personal level. And I know that in a moment we're going to hear your interview with Dr. Paul Evans about the heart and broccoli. But has anything else cropped up in the news in the last week or so that has been particularly sort of aimed at grabbing us on an individual level?
Yeah. Absolutely. The problem the reason this caught my eye is we're launching Stoic TV, which is the student Imperial College TV, on Friday at 1 o'clock. And so it was a really bad week last week when I looked at The Guardian online and read, watching television increases risk of death from heart disease. But I just want to say to everyone who's listening, it's worth the risk. Watch Stoic TV on Friday at 1 o'clock.
But, you know, this sort of headline that threatens death if you watch TV, I mean, what... Is this article full of science that backs this up, or is this just a sensational headline to sell copies of a newspaper?
Well, you know, the question is, do we get headlines like this to sort of divert our attention from the TV to newspapers? But the findings were reported in Circulation Journal of the American Heart Association. I haven't looked at it in detail. I don't know how reliably it's reported or not. But in principle, you know, I kind of think we do all know that a sedentary lifestyle isn't good for us on any level. And so, yeah, you know, so often with scientific reports, the actual headline is written by a sub-editor who's looking to grab our attention. So, you know, often the question is, does the headline reflect the quality of the reporting in the main body of the article? So,
yeah, and that's something we're actually going to think about in next week's show. We're going to be considering a little bit how science is communicated to the general public and how much sensationalism is used to grab attention to things that maybe don't deserve quite as much attention as they're given. But right now, let's think about the interview that you did this week. So tell us a little bit about who you met and what you did.
Yeah, well, you know, the detail will follow, but it was a really interesting interview with Dr. Evans. And all I can say is, you know, go and buy your green veg and steam them, don't boil them.
Well, thank you very much for coming into the studio today, Chrissy.
It's a pleasure. We're joined today by Dr. Paul Evans, who is Senior Lecturer in the British Heart Foundation Cardiovascular Unit at Imperial College. Good afternoon, Dr. Evans.
Good afternoon.
Heart and circulatory diseases are the UK's biggest killer. Atherosclerosis, or hardening of the arteries, is responsible for much of the underlying pathology of these diseases. As a nagging mother, a study published recently caught my eye, which shows that experimentally at least a compound found in broccoli and other green vegetables prevents inflammation of the arteries. Dr. Evans, would you be kind enough to tell us a little about this study?
Yes, so our group studies atherosclerosis, which is a chronic inflammatory disease of arteries. And this disease, as you alluded to, can cause angina and heart attack and stroke. And one of the interesting features of the disease is that it occurs predominantly at branches and bends in arteries, whereas the regions with uniform geometry, so the straight parts, are protected. And our study found, first of all, that the protected regions contain a protein called NRF2, which can protect arteries from inflammation. And we went on to show that the susceptible parts, the branches and bends, that they lack this protein. And in the second part of the study, we found that a compound called sulforaphane could enhance the production of NRF2 at branches and bends, and through this, sulforaphane could protect those susceptible regions from inflammation. And the part that caught the media attention was the fact that sulforaphane is a compound found at high levels in broccoli and other green vegetables. And so this part of the study has implications for cardiovascular health.
Now, this study actually took place in the laboratory, and I was just wondering, what are the clinical implications of these findings?
Well, it's well known that from epidemiological studies that consumption of green vegetables has beneficial effects on cardiovascular health, but the underlying mechanisms are uncertain. What our study suggests is that one of the mechanisms for the beneficial effects of green vegetables may be to increase the production of a protective anti-inflammatory protein in arteries. But what I should say is that at the moment this has been tested using cultured cells and also using animal studies, where we've injected animals with quite a high concentration of the compound. So we've shown in principle that this compound can protect arteries, but we now need to go on and see whether the smaller amounts that can be generated by consumption of broccoli and other vegetables, whether those smaller amounts can also have protective effects.
So would you say I'm still justified in nagging my children to eat broccoli and other green vegetables?
Absolutely. What we can say is that our study is consistent with recommendations from the British Heart Foundation and other groups that eating 5 portions of different fruit and vegetables a day is good for cardiovascular health. That still stands. What our study does is it provides a potential molecular mechanism for those beneficial effects. The other thing to point out is that your children should make sure that you don't overcook the broccoli, because the compound is present in raw broccoli and in lightly steamed broccoli, but it can be destroyed by overcooking.
Well, thank you for those cooking tips as well, Dr. Evans. So can you tell me how you became interested in inflammation, and why did you become a scientist?
Well, I was always interested in biology at school, and I went on and did a degree in biology at the University of Wales. I then did a master's degree in molecular biology, and from then, once I'd got those skills in the laboratory in working in molecular at the molecular level, I conducted my PhD in Cambridge on the immunology of transplantation, of organ transplantation. And from then I did a postdoc degree looking at the inflammatory process in transplantation, and then specialised in looking at inflammation in terms of endothelial cells, and these are the cells that lined the inside of veins and arteries, and I focused on their biology and how they influence inflammation. And so I had fellowships from Kidney Research UK looking at the physiology of endothelial cells in rejection of kidney transplants, and then more recently, after I joined Imperial College in 2004, I translated these interests to the cardiovascular field.
Gosh, that's fascinating, listening to your career progression. We also ask all of our guests to share with us a piece of science that means most to them, either something that's inspired them or amused them, or part of science that they can't live without. What are your thoughts?
Well, one of my heroes is Charles Darwin, and of course he's very well known for his fantastic theory of natural selection, and this is a wonderful mechanism to explain the aspects of the evolutionary process. And so Darwin is well known for this, but what is less known is that he was also an experimental biologist, and I've always been very impressed with his experiments. They seem very simplistic, but they are quite beautiful and elegant because of that simplicity. So for example, Darwin was interested in the colonization of islands by new plants and new animals, and so he set out a series of experiments to look at the colonization by plants, and his hypothesis was that seeds could be carried through the ocean currents to new islands. And so he took a whole bunch of seeds from different tropical plants, he immersed them in salt water for varying amounts of time, and then looked at the proportion of those that germinated, and he got some very clear answers. He found that a number of plants, that their seeds could survive salt water for a number of weeks, and so this was consistent with them being dispersed through the ocean. So it's a very simple experiment. It's an experiment that was literally performed in his garden in Kent, but I've always found them very elegant. They address a specific hypothesis, and they were carried out very nicely.
Now it's time for Capsule Medicine.
So we've thought a bit about the science of flow. We've heard all these news stories about heart disease and what to do or not to do about it. But what is the problem with heart disease? How does it actually endanger us as individuals?
Well, when we think about heart disease, we might get sort of stuck thinking about just the risk factors like smoking, cholesterol, poor diet, lack of exercise. And this makes heart disease seem a bit of a hassle and a bit boring, but it really is something that we should be paying attention to. Because, let's face it, it's not that much fun giving up all our vices and being healthy, but we need to think about the scary side of heart disease, like heart attacks and stroke. Now, the terrible consequences of allowing cardiovascular disease to take hold of our bodies. But what is it about heart disease that's actually dangerous?
Well, we know about bad diet and fatty foods causing our arteries to fur up and cause blockages, which cause heart attacks, right?
Okay, so that's one way that our hearts can kill us. Now, it may seem funny to think about it this way, but there are three important sets of arteries that come from the heart.
Three? I can only think of two. The one that takes the oxygen blood from the lungs and sends it off around the body, and one that takes the used blood from the body and sends it back to the lungs to get oxygenated again.
Well, strictly that's true, and I'm sure most scientists would agree with that. But the oxygenated blood leaving the heart by the main artery, called the aorta, also has to supply the heart muscle itself. And so very early in the path of the aorta, there's a fork in the road, and this is where the coronary arteries branch off. And it's these arteries that, when blocked, cause a heart attack, and that's the same arteries that then get replaced in bypass operations.
So how does a blockage in one of those arteries cause a heart attack?
Well, the heart is just a big muscle with hollowed out chambers that allow the blood to pool or collect before the muscle contracts and squirts the blood out all around the body. Now, the key thing about the heart is that it has to contract. That's how it pumps the blood every second or so, keeping our whole body alive and oxygenated. Now, contracting a muscle is a very energetic process and it requires a lot of oxygen. So if the blood flow to this muscle is compromised by a blockage in the coronary arteries, the muscle doesn't get this oxygen and it dies.
So a part of the heart dies and then can't contract anymore.
That's right. And because of the physics that govern the shape of the heart and the power of contractions, the outcome of the heart attack depends on which bit of heart is affected and therefore how much muscle is damaged.
So it could pump less efficiently or it could just fail to pump completely.
That's right. And that leads us on to another way in which the heart can let us down. And Chrissy was touching on this just now when she was talking about the electronics, but I'm going to take it right back to basics. So the damage to the heart caused by a heart attack can actually affect all the electronics of the heart,
which would affect the heart rhythm and the effectiveness of the pumping.
That's right. Now, this electrical disturbance can happen for many reasons, but an important one is just a good old heart attack.
So what can go wrong with this then?
Well, for every normal heartbeat, as Chrissy was saying, an electrical impulse is generated by special cells in the atria, which are the smaller chambers at the top of the heart. Now, this impulse travels through special pathways in the heart muscle, allowing a highly coordinated contraction of the heart.
So it doesn't just randomly go wham and shove the blood out then?
Not quite. The atria contract first, and then the ventricles, and this is all highly choreographed. So if a bit of the heart muscle that these impulses has to travel through is dead, that's going to be a major problem for heart contraction. So this is one disturbance to the electrical activity, a blockage or interruption of normal impulse conduction.
So how else can the electrics go wrong then?
Well, you can also get aberrant impulses starting in strange places and commanding the heart to beat too fast or in an uncoordinated pattern.
But surely speed isn't too much of a problem. That would just mean that the blood gets sent out of the heart quicker.
Quicker might sound better, but really it isn't, because the heart has to pause between contractions to allow it to refill. And if it doesn't, there's nothing there for the heart to pump out when it does contract. And the lack of coordination is very important too. Now, these arrhythmias can be fatal if they're not treated by defibrillation, that's, you know, electric shocks to the chest, or powerful drugs, and that has to happen quickly.
Well, I'm really interested in all this, but unfortunately I'm going to have to stop you. Now, if you have any questions or comments about this week's Capsule Medicine, please chuck an email our way at studio@shortscience.co.uk and we'll do our best to answer your questions.
So we're continuing our 2010 quiz from last week. Now, Emma has taken an early but slightly unsurprising lead with 2 out of 3, while as usual, I'm struggling on 1 out of 3. So let's start with my first question for Emma. Question number 1. AF is a common condition where a part of the heart does not contract properly. What does AF stand for? Is it A, atrial fibrillation, B, atrial flutter, or C, aberrant function?
Well, my reasoning behind this, I think I'd know what it is, because when I, rather revealingly, watch, you know, the TV hospital dramas, there's always, oh, she's going into VF. And I looked up what VF was the other day, and that's ventricular fibrillation. So I'm assuming that the AF is just the other way, and it's atrial fibrillation.
That is correct. 1 point to you.
There we go.
Okay, so let's find your first question
for
me.
Watching Holby City can be good.
Yeah.
Right, question two. Yes, that all question one from me. Right, flows which are turbulent have a high blank number and laminar flow has a low blank number. They're the same blank. So what is the blank? Is it A, Stokes flow, B, Reynolds, or C, Newtonian?
Gee, I don't know. First of all, high turbulent. Well, I don't think it would... I basically have no idea. But I don't think it would be Newtonian because... Obviously, being totally idiotic, I only associate that with gravity, although I'm sure he did lots of other scientific things that were highly important, which may have had a lot to do with flow, I don't know. Stokes' flow number... See, it sounds like it should be it because it's got the word flow in it.
Yeah.
But then it also sounds like, who'd call it that? They'd just call it Stokes' number. Unless Stokes had lots of numbers. One of which might have been flow. I don't know. So that process of elimination, I'm going to go for Reynolds, even though I think it's the wrong answer.
Well, you are, in fact, right through that process. The Reynolds number, as mathematicians out there will know, is all to do with turbulence. When you have a high Reynolds number, things, rivers and stuff are turbulent, and when you have a low, it's laminar. So there you go.
Okay, well, I feel slightly better now. I've got another point on the board. So, question two for Emma. Which of the following is an atrioventricular reentrant tachycardia? Now, that sounds complicated, but it just means that there's a short circuit in the heart and that the impulse isn't following the proper course and it sort of circles round and round. So, is it A, Cat Hunter Brown syndrome, B, Lion Trotter Gray syndrome, or C, Wolf Parkinson White syndrome?
Right, I have absolutely no idea, so this is going to be a complete guess. So, atrioventricular reentrant tachycardia, right. So, okay. That's not really giving me any clues because it's all just names. But, didn't Wolf have something to do with hearts? I don't know. That rings a bell for me. But maybe I'm... maybe that was cell imaging.
it's just a little blur, isn't it?
Coming back. Right, yeah. Just complete guess then. C, Wolf Parkinson White syndrome.
That's actually correct.
Oh, yay!
But I think I should get a bonus point for the inventiveness of my other answers.
Yeah, that was
Cat,
good.
Lion and Wolf.
There you go.
Brown, grey and white.
How could I not even notice that?
I thought that was very creative of me. So Emma has now got 2 points and it's my turn for a question.
So question two from me is, a wide meander of a river can become cut off because of erosion and build-up and stuff. So what does this form? Does it form A, an oxbow lake, B, a floodplain, or C, a delta?
I think I know the answer, and I think I know because I think I can cross out two of them. So it's not a floodplain, because that's just an area that floods when it floods, like rain and stuff. A delta is the bit that's like by the sea, so it's got to be an oxbow lake. That's my final answer.
That is indeed correct.
Yeah.
So that's when a wide meander just becomes cut off. So you could get like a little island of land with water flowing around. And I think eventually it gets cut off because it's just flowing the river. Anyway, yes, that is correct. 2 out of 2.
I had a very, very small one of those in my garden as a child.
Oh, wow.
It was more of a stream.
A very small oxbow lake.
Yes.
Well, there you go.
there we go.
And in Australia, apparently they're called billabongs. So that is what billabong refers to, like the brand of clothes and stuff.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
You learn a lot on this show.
Yeah,
it's
worth
coming every week, I think.
Very good trivia.
Yeah. So my question number three for Emma. Does heart block most commonly cause A, a fast heartbeat, B, a slow heartbeat, or C, no heartbeat at all? And it's the most common thing that it causes because it could in fact cause all three.
Okay, right. So a heart block, I'm imagining, is just blocking blood from getting to the heart. So I'm thinking probably... a fast heartbeat or no heartbeat at all, because I think if there wasn't enough blood going into the heart, then it would be pumping and pumping trying to get blood around the body, so it would be pumping faster, or no heartbeat at all because the blood's just dead, because the heart's just dead. I'm gonna go for a fast heartbeat, trying to make up for the blood that's not there.
I love your reasoning. And your fatal error was in assuming that heart block means it's not
getting blood.
Because heart block's actually, it's an electrical thing, and it's when the electrical current is blocked, and so the electrics aren't flowing around. And so most commonly you get a slow heartbeat, but you can have either of the other two in rarer circumstances. But if the question had been about blood getting to the heart,
I would have had good reason.
You would have had a tachycardia, so a fast heartbeat, if there was a low blood volume.
Well,
so like if you went into shock and you were bleeding out and there wasn't enough blood coming into the heart because you just didn't have enough, your heart would be beating faster to make up for that. And then again, if there was no blood at all, or if there was a blockage, complete blockage in pushing blood through, like you might get if a massive blood clot shot into the middle of the heart and blocked it up, you then could get no heartbeat at all. So your reasoning was spot on, but sadly wrong.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Anyway, move on.
Right. Your last question three is a bit of a random guessy one. How long is the River Thames? It's relevant to rivers. A, 780 kilometres. B, 1,508 kilometres. Or C, 346 kilometres.
I don't think it can be that long because England's not that big.
No, England is not that big.
And I know it wiggles around a lot because I've seen EastEnders.
Yeah.
But
we've really proved our quality today. EastEnders and Elby City.
Can I just clarify for anybody listening that I don't regularly listen or watch EastEnders? It's just I did once in my childhood happen to see the intro. Not even the programme, just the intro. Anyway, I'm going to go for C, 346.
And you would be correct. So yeah. I think you've got 3 out of 3 today.
Did.
Yeah, well done. So, yeah.
So, okay. Well, so my score now is 4 out of 6 and Emma's is 4 out of 6. So I have drawn even. It's all to play for. So we'll pick up this battle again next week. But for now, it's time to announce the answer to last week's science trivia question, which was...
Which chemical element has the shortest name?
And the answer was tin. But what about this week's question?
Right, so... The question is, if red diamonds occur because of structural deformities in the mineral, and yellow and blue diamonds are due to nitrogen and boron impurities respectively, what are green diamonds due to?
That's right. So if you know the answer, send us an email to studio@shortscience.co.uk and you could find yourself the proud winner of a Short Science fridge magnet. But that's all we've got time for today. Before we sign off, if you've got any comments or questions, don't forget to email us at studio@shortscience.co.uk. Now you can send us your suggestions for Capsule Medicine and Science, and let us know if you'd like to be a guest on the show. You can also submit your profile if you'd like to be added to our site and have your very own capsule there for everyone to take a look at. So we really want to know what it's like for you to be working in science or to have an experience of science and what it is that's important or interesting about your science.
Yes, so once more, the website is www.shortscience.co.uk. You can also listen again to the show, if you missed any, from the Imperial College Radio website at www.icradio.com. And tomorrow, the podcast will be out and available for download. You can subscribe to us via iTunes, just search for Short Science, or follow the link from our website. Alternatively, you can subscribe with any number of podcatchers by following the subscribe link on our podcast page.
So, thank you very much for listening. This has been Short Science. Our guest today was Dr. Paul Evans. Additional reporting was by Chrissy Douglas. The presenters were Emma Berger and myself, Elizabeth Hawke. The production was done by ourselves, and the theme tune was written and produced by Don Gould of Music by Design.
Thanks for listening, and we'll be back at the same time next week for another episode of Short Science.
Ascoltando i podcast di Radio Bue, la web radio degli studenti dell'Università di Padova, www.radiobue.it.